The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. J. Edgar Hoover said a child who is taught to respect the laws of God will respect the laws of man. And truer words were never spoken, but the only trouble is you live in a world today where children are not taught to respect the laws of God, nor are they taught to respect the laws of man, because their parents, frankly, don't respect the law. Today, you live in a lawless world, a world that flouts authority, that despises dominion, that scoffs at law and order. On a worldwide scale, a national scale, a local level, you're living, whether we like to realize it or not, in the age of ultimate selfishness, in the age of total self-indulgence. A don't-care world of personal lust and greed. Now, I suppose you could kid yourself and you could say, well, who's this guy and what's he so excited about? That would be quite a natural reaction, I believe. You could say it's not all that bad. You could say conditions aren't as bad as they might seem, and we could sing there's a silver lining to every cloud and so on. But you would know you were kidding yourself. If you did kid yourself, you would know that you're deliberately and willingly being deceived. You would know that in reality it is a whole lot worse than I can even begin to state it in the 30-minute broadcast. Now, perhaps some of the latest examples of the ultimate and total don't care and selfishness of a stand-by society in which we live today, who stands around and watches horrible atrocities and merciless crimes being committed while they're immobile, silent, merciless, don't even lift a finger to help a law enforcement agency. Perhaps the best examples of those, or shall I say the worst, were the examples of the killing of a girl named Kitty Genovese, who was stabbed 3 separate times while people looked on from their apartments in New York City. 3 different times the assailant approached the woman and stabbed her, and each time she screamed, "I'm being killed, help me, help me," and at least 40 or 50 or more people turned on their lights, looked out the window, saw it going on, turned off the lights, and went back to bed. Now, the Saturday Evening Post ran the story about one neighbor who finally did call the police after the assailant had had 3 separate opportunities to depart from the scene, come back, and finally complete the job by mercilessly killing this woman. Finally, she was killed, after all, with all those people looking on when they could have done something. I think someone did say, "Hey, you let that girl alone," before he went back to bed. Well, after this one had finally called the police after considerable hesitation, he was quoted as saying in the Saturday Evening Post, "I didn't want to get involved." I suppose nowadays it involves you if you are an onlooker and you see something happening and you try to thwart it or try to stop it when you know it's absolutely contrary to the law and that someone is being horribly mutilated or hurt in some terrible fashion or a murder is being committed. I suppose the average citizen feels he gets involved if he even turns in an alarm. What a callous, brutish, dumb, bestial society it is that we're engendering. What is it? Have people looked at murder so much? Have they seen these flesh-eating movies so much? Have they read the novels and the paperback comics so much? Have they seen all the television brutality to the extent that they're so totally callous to it that it's as if it isn't really happening, that it's like a dream world? There isn't really a murder going on in front of them. And so they stand and watch it with bemused interest. What is wrong with calloused, indifferent human beings today, who on the one moment consider their television sets bemoaning and bewailing the assassination of a president, and it seems that the very next can witness one of the most horrible crimes they have ever seen, and casually go back to bed with the comment, "I'm tired." Well, Saturday Evening Post said that finally when this one did call the police, it was only after he had first telephoned a friend for advice. "Hey, Joe, what do you think? There's a woman down here being stabbed to death, and I don't want to get involved. Do you think I should call police?" Oh, I wish that man could listen to this program. How dumb can you get? What kind of a society is this? The policemen were calling a crowd, I want to tell you about, a bunch of jerks. And how else can you put it? It's rather disgusting. Rather sickening sometimes when you stop to think about the average moral level of the average individual anymore today, now isn't it? And I'll show you why it got this way and whether or not it was predicted to be this way and what the outcome of it is going to be, because there is a solution, there is an answer ahead, and there is a way to solve the problem, but it's not the way you may think. And it's not the way you might vote for, it's not the method and the way that you might choose, and it's not anywhere near by the method or the mode or the means that you may think it is. But the problems of this world and its lawlessness, all of those problems are going to be solved, and in no uncertain terms, and in not too many more years in the future. Well, then finally, this man, after he'd called a friend, crossed the roof of this tenement house to an apartment of a 70-year-old friend and sat down and discussed it with her a while and asked her, wouldn't she please call, so that he wouldn't get involved. Another of these neighbors said, and I quote, I didn't want my husband to get involved, so they didn't call. And a man who saw the attacks without coming to her aid saw her as she was slumping to the ground and the assailant leaving after having plunged a knife into her side, said, I was tired. I went back to bed. Oh, well, we should all stand aside and realize the poor man was tired. The woman should have cooperated by not being stabbed near his doorstep. It just leaves you rather speechless. It leaves you rather ashamed, rather sorry. Makes you want to hang your head and say, we're sorry, world, we're such a wretched example. Now, it isn't true that these things don't happen elsewhere. They do. They happen in Italy, they happen in Indonesia, and you people in the Philippines are especially acquainted with crime because the Philippines right now happen to be a seething hotbed of mounting crime and juvenile violence, rape, every type of atrocity. And it's on the rise in Australia and in Great Britain and around the world. But it seems like the United States always must have the dubious distinction of leading the world in wretchedness, of leading the world in crime, in rape, in automobile theft, in divorce, in violence of every type and description. And yet we're supposed to be a great Christian nation preaching to all the world about love your neighbor and pray for your enemy and so on. And we haven't got the common decency to admit we're our brother's keeper. And that was the name of the editorial in the Saturday Evening Post. Am I my brother's keeper? Well, then another example. A ravished girl fled screaming nude from her attacker to the very threshold of a Bronx office building where she pleaded with onlookers, please help her. A crowd of 40 finally gathered, and the police had to shoulder their way through the 40, who were just gawking and looking, I guess, for the sheer joy of it, to come to the poor girl's aid after she had been brutally attacked, had been stripped, had been threatened with a razor, had been beaten and whipped, and then finally raped. And finally, when she broke free, she fled down the stairway screaming, help me, help me, he raped me, he raped me. About 40 people gathered silently, immobile, heedless, and looked on. Quite a world we live in. It's a don't care, totally self-indulgent, crass, brutish world. And this world was described, believe it or not, centuries ago in your Bible. No, I don't mean that world. I mean this world. I mean it was predicted to be this way. And my friends, like it or not, wherever you live, in whatever nation on the face of this earth, it is going to get a lot worse. These are just a little here and there, once upon a time, once in a while, incidents that seem to be rather isolated, and people say, why get excited about it? It probably happened somewhere else the same day, but at least if it doesn't happen in your front yard, it didn't happen in your backyard, you didn't hear it, see it, or witness it, then maybe you can kid yourself that it's a nice, comfy, rosy world we live in after all, and there's no need to worry. Everything's going to come out all right. Yes, you would be kidding yourself. Why don't you send your daughter downtown for groceries at 11:30 at night? Take a test. Send your daughter out at night. No, we know better, don't we? We know we're living in a world that is just as bad as I could possibly define it and describe it, and I do not have the words. I lack the vocabulary. I lack the time and the ability to describe how wretched, how rotten, and how vile this age, this society, this world is becoming. But it was predicted in the Bible, and there's a pretty good description of it back in 2 Timothy. Yes, the Bible. The Bible's not out of date, you know. The Bible is applicable to today. And the Bible is that collection of knowledge that man could not have discovered for himself. It's the absolute, authoritative, infallible word of a living God. And this word is going to judge you, and it's going to judge every human being on the face of this earth, like it or not, believe it or not, accept it, agree with it or not. it's still a fact. God says, let every man be a liar, but God is true. Our disbelief and our scoffing about the scriptures and the existence of God is not going to deny the existence of God. It isn't going to have God conveniently step out of the way. He still exists. The Bible is still his word. It still carries a wallop of the power of his authority. And it shall stand if the world fails and is thrown away into the vastness of the universe. God says his word will still be here. His word is sure. It's absolute. He said through the pen of the Apostle Paul back in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. Now, you know, if you're a beatnik squatting on a pad in the village, you can say, oh, sure, big deal. There have always been men with placards saying, flee from the wrath to come. But it just depends on whether or not you want to sink into the ranks of the idiots to say such a thing. Have you heard of hydrogen bombs? Do we know we're living in a world of orbital satellites? Do we know we're living in the threshold of the space age? Do we know we're living in a world that now talks in terms of overkill of hydrogen and atomic bombs being stockpiled so that we could literally blast every man, woman, and child off the face of this earth by accident? Do we know the meaning of the times in which we live? Or do we deny it? Do we deny reality? Too many people do. Too many people deny reality. But God described our society very aptly when he said, men shall be lovers of their own selves. Think about it a while. What was the motivation of these people? Couldn't they even take off a coat to cover the poor girl's nakedness? Couldn't someone even try to cover her and to give her some kind of comfort? And to start looking real quickly for the assailant to see where he had gone? Couldn't they turn in an alarm and call a policeman? The policeman had just heard the screams. They were just attracted because they happened to be nearby. They weren't called or summoned. Who knows? Maybe it would have gone on for hours. And that's not an isolated incident, my friends. It just isn't. It just is not. I don't care whether it's a parade or a lineup at a grocery store. You can witness the abject, screaming, grasping, tearing, animalistic selfishness of human beings who have not the slightest respect for their fellow man. And it is a fact of society today. Now, I'm not trying to change society. I'm just telling you the way things are. Because I know I'm not going to change it. And I know that. But I'll tell you that God is, and I also know that. And I know approximately when, and I know the instrumentality he's going to use, and I know just where he's going to begin. Men, he said, shall be lovers of their own selves. Covetous, that means desirous, a great, lusting, green-eyed, grasping, selfish ball of covetousness. Boasters, oh yes, proud, great swelling clouds of vanity and ego. Blasphemers, he said. And increasingly today, even public figures seem to delight in being foul of mouth. That's something that is almost par for the course to make you popular. Apparently, it's supposed to be something that where a person, if the slightest little untoward incident comes along in his life, there is always supposed to be a curse right on the tip of his tongue, right on the forefront of his mouth. But God says, swear not at all. And he says, you're breaking the laws of the Almighty Creator God when you do. But you blaspheme not only by taking his name in vain. But we can blaspheme God just by living contrary to the laws that he has established for our good. He goes on to define our day, our era, our society. He said we would be disobedient to parents. Verse 2, 2 Timothy 3, are we? You heard any disobedient children around your neighborhood lately? Disobedient to parents. It is the curse of our time as much as any other curse you can speak of is disobedient children, unthankful children. Resentful, rebellious, mixed up, frustrated children. Riotous, unruly children. What a pity. People can train parrots and dogs, but they can't train children. Doesn't make sense, does it? I know when I go into a restaurant, waitresses come over and say, I don't understand it. How did you do it? Your three sons are sitting there quiet. I've never seen such quiet children. Well, I don't tell them how I did it. Because while they might appreciate the product, I think they might hate the method that it took to get the product that way. Now, my children love me. They really do. Ask them. But you know, it is the keynote of our time, it seems, this thing of disobedience to parents. You need to write for our free booklet on child rearing, the plain truth about child rearing. Understand a little bit about children that maybe you didn't know before. Every great big criminal who ever walked this earth was once a real sweet tiny little baby. That's the keynote of our time, disobedience to parents. So write for the booklet and find out more about it, what you can do in your own family with your own children. Unthankful, he said. Unholy. Oh, we are that, all right. The great affluency of the United States, of Britain, of Australia, of the growing wealth of the common market, of the dog eat, dog don't care, I'll get mine while the getting is good, and you take yours if you can get it first, and so on. The attitude of the accumulation of as much of the material possessions of this earth as we can get our grasping hands on. Unthankful, however, for it. No gratitude, and we wouldn't know who to thank anyhow, would we? It's getting so. Anyone who, as they have watered it down, says grace. I don't know how you say grace. There's nothing graceful that can come out of a human mouth, except maybe if he prays to God. But I don't say grace at the table. But we do ask God to bless the food. There is a difference. But, you know, people don't even know who to thank anymore, because they're not sure there is a God. They've accepted the ideas of evolution. And, of course, if you want to write for our booklets on Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible, we'll show you about the emptiness and the vanity of evolution. And they've got to have a faith that defies description. They've got to have a faith which is a far-out, weird, huge, empty faith that defies any faith that was ever had in the mind of any religionist who has ever walked this earth. It's a faith which makes them go along day to day denying facts and things as they are and as they literally exist. Oh, that's a faith for you. The emptiest faith in the world, the greatest superstition of the age, the blackness and the blindness of empty nothingness that is going by the label of science. Evolution. Never has been proved, can't be proved. The facts are that evolution is not true. Now, that's quite a challenge, you know. If you're an evolutionist or an atheist, you ought to look into something besides the little tiny twigs that are totally separated from any main trunk. They're lying in a huge hodgepodge of collected conflicting ideas, hypotheses, and theories of men who oftentimes aren't quite sure what they're talking about. If you'd pick up any history textbook, any book on evolution, and you would just underline all the perhapses, it would seem as, and maybe, and would give rise to feel that, and Professor Smedley thought that, and all of these other guesses and maybes and happenstances and wherewithals, you would be amazed at the collection of maybes and perhapses that you would be underlining. And then in a few short paragraphs, you would find the book talking as if it is past fact, established proof that the earth gradually cooled and this and that and the other thing happened, and how it all gave rise to life. Oh, it's rather fantastic, the faith that an evolutionist has got to have. Now, his faith, the trouble with it is oftentimes about the same kind of faith that many religionists have. It's a blind faith. They haven't really looked into it to prove it for themselves. And, of course, evolutionists can't. But a person who believes in the Bible can. He can prove whether or not God exists and do it by the tools of science. He can prove whether or not the Bible is God's word and do it scientifically. So write for those booklets and prove it to yourself. They're absolutely free of charge. I'll give you the mailing address at the close of this broadcast. Now, he goes on to say that we would be living in a time where people would be without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. All that begins in infancy. If someone is supposed to believe in a certain moral standard today, he's called square. It used to be that the word square meant that you were square with your neighbor, that you were a square shooter, that you were a real square fellow. That you were right, it meant right angle, square, it meant like a block, it meant solid. It meant someone who had some moral standards. But today, you know, unless you're an odd ball, you're off, you're on a jangled angle of confusion and ridiculousness, then you're not just hep with the crowd. But today, a person who is right, a person who is moral, a person who believes in adhering to the laws of God, in living by them and obeying them, is called square. Well, that's a real good title. Because he is square. You bet he is. And to be unsquare is to be unbalanced, unsound, and abnormal. You'd better hope you're square. You'd better hope the people dwelling on pads with beards call you square. So that maybe you're right. Maybe there's something normal about you after all. The world is full of oddballs. It really is. And it's going to be fuller before the whole thing is over. But God's going to take care of it all when the time is right. Now, he said we would be fierce and despisers of those that are good, and we are. Society is. Traitors, heady, headstrong, it means, self-willed, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. And we're getting more like ancient Rome every day. It takes more blood. It takes more gore to satisfy a movie-going audience anymore. Time was when audiences would sit hushed at the scene of a murder. Nowadays, the little kiddies jamming popcorn and candy down their faces are screaming and giggling and kicking the backs of the chairs and shouting for more. Time was when a particular act of brutality in a movie would draw hushed ohs and ahs from the audience and leave you rather shocked. But today, every movie is loaded with it from before the announcement of the name of the film, the chances are, to the last scene. And people leave rather empty, wishing they'd seen more. Oh, it's fantastic today. It really is. And then, of course, people wonder why murder and why crime and why brutality. They wonder why a little child whose mind has dwelt on in the most vivid, the most absolutely fantastic method of teaching that has ever been devised, that of sight and sound at the same time, of television or movies, and after he has absolutely sat there and absorbed and just drank in all of his violence and brutality and has lived it vicariously by the hundreds and hundreds of hours in his young, formative years, then a parent wonders, why did my Johnny go out and commit this murder or the other one? He's always been a good boy. Yes, but when he has spent more time looking at that type of thing, of reading all the violence of his comic books, of the pornographers who lurk around the corners of the high schools of today, and when he's been under the pressures that he has been under, and he has been reading, and he has been looking at, and viewing, and hearing, and telling all of the vile things that make up his everyday pressures, I don't see why parents ought to wonder. It seems to be obvious. You know, it's been said that physically you are what you eat. Well, mentally, my friends, you are what you think. What comes into your mind? What does your mind dwell on? What do you read? What do you imbibe? What do you look at? What do you do for relaxation, for entertainment? We're living in a pleasure mad era where it takes more and more brutality to get through the great big thick calluses of a society which is callous to crime, which is indifferent to violence. Yes, we do. That's time somebody began to say something about it. Not that I'm going to change it. I know better than that. I'm not campaigning to change it. I'm telling you what God says. That he said it would get this way, and he says he's going to do something about it. I'm not trying to tell you that I'm going to become a candidate to go eradicate crime. Not even remotely. Because, you know, Jesus said he did not come to bring peace on this earth. He said so. Now, does that sound shocking? It sounds like the opposite, I imagine, from anything you've ever heard before about the Bible. But it's true, and he said it. Think not that I am come to bring peace on earth. I am not come to bring peace but a sword. Read it, Matthew 10:34. Matthew 10:34. He said it. And he meant it. And it's true. Well, he said in verse 5 of the 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, having a form of godliness. Yes, out of it all. The fellow who is stealing from the boss's till 6 days a week will wander into a church and feel better one day out of the week. And of course, sometimes there develops a little confusion as to which day that ought to be. The fellow who has been trying to take out his neighbor's wife, or who has been out cheating his boss, or cheating the people who have been trading in his business. Isn't it amazing that on top of it all, aside from it all, out of all the smoke of confusion and crime and of violence and immorality and pornography, that here is a society which has a form of godliness, that out of the whole thing projects up through the smoke and the smog of the confusion of crime, the church steeple. And people begin to wonder, what is the church doing? Is the church doing any good? What is the place of the church in this 20th century? And when they poll the population, they frankly don't know. Many think it's to keep kiddies off the street. It's to have something as the anchor of the soul. It's to help combat crime, but how can you do that when even the name of God is being taken out of the public schools? Does the church combat crime? Well, then, my friends, maybe we'd better look at a couple of facts. Church attendance is at an all-time high, point one. Crime is at an all-time high, point two. What does that add up to? Well, that adds up to mean that the church is not combating crime. That's all. It just adds up to me that the pulpit has lost its power.
that people do not fear the laws of God. They don't believe they're supposed to obey the laws of God. And, of course, an awful lot of people are telling them they don't have to anyhow, so that's par for the course. As far as that's concerned, you could probably go to an awful lot of religious circles and hear that the laws of God are done away. I wonder if that has anything to do with mounting crime. I wonder if the fact that so many people by the millions and the hundreds of thousands believe God's laws were done away, abrogated, taken out of the way by Jesus Christ, and that you don't have to obey your parents under penalty of eternal death unless you repent of it, that you don't have to obey the Ten Commandments. I wonder if the fact of the no-law teaching of today's modern watered-down theological ideas has anything to do with the mounting of crime. There may be some relationship. But 1 + 1 = 2, and 2 + 2 = 4, and church attendance is burgeoning, and so is crime, and so is divorce, and so is disease. Well, my friends, isn't it time we took a good long look at the world and realized the way it really is after all? It's time you knew where you're headed, where you're going, what this world is all about, what is the meaning of the times in which you live. How can you understand it? You need these booklets, Does God Exist, and the proof of the Bible, and find out whether or not these words that I've been reading to you from Scripture carry any weight and authority. Write for this article, Were the Ten Commandments in Force Before Moses? Find out if they're still applicable today. Write for this big, thick booklet on the Ten Commandments and find out whether or not they are to be obeyed. And write for this big, thick booklet on child-rearing, the plain truth about child-rearing. And you'll also want to write for this booklet on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. Here are the two widely divergent views of politicians and government leaders and then scientists of what they secretly feel the world tomorrow is going to be like. Many of them feel it won't even be here. And then scientists talk about a wonderful, glittering, sort of a gigantic Disneyland of leisure, of more pleasure and ease and luxury for the few, but more starvation, more riots, more wars, more upsets for the many. But all the way through this booklet, you will see solutions. You will see the predictions about the outcome. You will see present-day trends and conditions in the big countries around this world analyzed and solved. You will see tomorrow's headlines today. You'll see the really big news that is not being reported anywhere else about the way this world is going to be. And included, one of the most fantastic newspapers you've ever read. Sort of a could-be newspaper, the way the world news could be today, and believe it or not, the way it will be in not very many more years. The best news you could read, an article about total disarmament. Articles about the solution to the big problems that everyone worries about today. Solving our economic problems, bringing people out of poverty, solving the racial hatreds and strife of people. Making wasteland productive. Solutions to the problems of weather, solving the problems of divorce, solving the problems of education and school dropouts, what have you. It's all here in this newspaper that is contained inside the booklet. Now, you don't have to ask for it separately. The booklet is entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's free of charge, no price, no one's going to call on you. We don't give your name to someone else. We protect it and safeguard it in our own IBM files, and we'll send it to you immediately upon receiving your request if you'll write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station and write for the booklet immediately. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.
KQRS AM and FM stereo Golden Valley. It's 7 o'clock. Now, news on cue. Israel has captured the old city of Jerusalem from Jordanian troops. The Mandelbaum Gate has opened to Jews for the first time in 20 years. Israeli troops have returned from the old walled city and told cheering Israelis the 3,000-year-old sacred city is, in these words, once and for all in our hands. United Press International correspondent Robert Musel says Israeli jets and tanks combined to pound Jordanian positions into submission. Musel himself dodged sniper fire to make one of the first eyewitness reports from the city. There were unofficial reports Israel captured the city yesterday, but Israeli radio stations still broadcast appeals to people in Jordan, in the Jordanian sector of the city, to surrender. The Egyptian embassy in Paris says the United Arab Republic rejects the United Nations Security Council's proposal for a ceasefire in the Mideast. The Israeli ambassador to France calls this a bad omen. The Israelis also are making advances through the Sinai Desert, and there is one report that they have broken the Egyptian blockade at the Gulf of Aqaba. In other news...